Hey y'all, it's V, the Tax Lien Strategist. I'm about to start uploading some segments as promised based on our meeting this Saturday with deed checkups and just kind of like a question and answer segment. I get a lot of emails from people who I've never met, but they may have heard me on an interview, on a podcast somewhere, and something that I wrote and something that I, you know, who knows? But sometimes they remember. So here is the email. Basically, V, you know, I saw you on, listened to you and your interview on so-and-so's podcast. And I was really interested in knowing a little bit more about the doctrine of part performance that you mentioned in a situation. And, you know, if you can expound on it, please do. So, y'all, I kind of forgot about that interview. I forget about a lot of, you know, those type things. I just go where people ask me and share what I can share. But I kind of partly remember that. Of course, I remember, you know, had to have been, you know, basically what I said is based on what it is, you know, that we learn in this type of these type of deals. And again, I want to preface this particular segment and future segments by saying that I'm in no way attempting to practice law on this podcast. I only talk about the circumstances and situations from my own experience as either a realtor, broker, or investor. So, this is pretty easy here. The doctrine of part performance. So, I remember this situation where two people, they both became my clients later, but I remember them recalling their situation where there was an oral contract to do something on some land. And so what happens is we're going to be talking real quick about common law involving real estate, though. See, people know about common law versus marital law in states that are common law states or that, you know, that recognize common law as a form of being married. But this is common law involving contracts in real estate. And it's called the doctrine of part performance. And this is what I remember about that one. And this is what it means. So this doctrine allows one party to enforce an oral contract for the sale of land, which would normally be unenforceable under the statute of frauds, because such contracts are typically required to be in writing. You know, we're afraid to get involved in contracts out there, especially land contracts, without them being in writing. Don't do it. Don't chance it. I know circumstances come up sometimes where it has to be done orally. You know, people have explained to me why they did that, and we had to kind of work our way out of it, but this happened. So it was already done. So under the doctrine of part performance, if one party has taken significant actions that clearly rely on the agreement, let's say they pay part of the purchase price of an agreement, take possession of a property, or make substantial improvements to the land, the court might enforce the oral agreement despite the lack of a written contract. So the doctrine is used to prevent unjust outcomes that may occur if from denying enforcement of an oral agreement after one party has already significantly changed their position based on the contract. So, under the doctrine of part performance, courts will look for actions by the party seeking the enforcement. And here's one or two of them. Clearly referable to the agreement. The actions taken must clearly indicate that they were done because of the agreement. For example, taking possession of the land, again, making the improvements, as I just mentioned, or paying part of the purchase price are actions that demonstrate that someone is relying on the contract. Substantial. The actions must be significant enough to suggest to a court that it would be unjust not to enforce the agreement. Minor or trivial actions typically do not meet this threshold. So the purpose of this doctrine is to prevent injustice or fraud that could result from the refusal of one party to fulfill the agreement after the other party has acted in reliance or by relying on that agreement, reliance on the agreement. This legal principle recognizes that enforcing some oral agreements are necessary, and they are necessary to uphold fairness and prevent one party from gaining an undue advantage by lying about the terms of an agreement after the other party has already made significant changes to their position based on their agreement. I remember this case, and this guy who emailed me reminded me, that's been a couple of years. I kind of forgot about that case, but I'm glad he reminded me. I may have to also put that as add that to some of the courses. But that's what that means. I'm hoping I know he'll be listening. He listens to the podcast. He's a subscriber, so he'll be waiting for this. But yeah, that's what that one was about. So you can't just go around here making promises orally, because the person who you made the promise to may take you up on it and may start making changes based on your oral agreement. A lot of times, these kind of agreements are done between friends and family. You're hardly going to take an oral agreement from a stranger. So these are done normally by people that you know. And there are cases where the courts have ruled in the favor of the person who's was relying on the terms of the oral contract, although it wasn't written. Of course, we want to make sure that we don't get in the habit of doing this thing, going out there doing, you know, oral contracts. But in some cases, when that happens, the courts may rule in the favor of the person so that they won't be unfairly taken advantage of, and by their movements, whether they have gone about life as if they believe that agreement was, you know, an agreement that they should rely on. So that's what that one's about. Anybody want to ask me any questions about it or want some cases about that, you can email me at thetaxlienstrategist@gmail.com. I'll talk to you all soon.